the Senate please come to order? Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Roll call for Friday, February the 2nd. Anderson.
Here.
Almond.
Here.
Barrasso.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Here.
Coe.
Excuse.
Excuse. Cooper. DiCaria.
Here.
Beck.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hines.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Joe. Joe. Johnson.
Here.
Larson. Massey.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Mosler.
Here.
Nicholas.
Here.
Peck excused. Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Sessions.
Here.
Townsend.
Here.
Vasey.
Here.
Von Slatern.
Here.
President Schiffer.
Here.
Job.
Excuse.
Excuse. And Larson.
Excuse.
Excuse. Okay. 26 present and 4 excused.
Please join us in prayer with Reverend Robin.
I want to thank you for letting me be with you this week. It has truly been my privilege. Thank you. Let us pray. Gracious God, whose grace redeems all things, whose justice brings peace, whose love extends beyond all boundaries, we thank you this day for the people who have become a part of our lives, for those for whom we have found an immediate affinity, for they bring freshness to our lives, joy to our spirits, and love to our hearts. I understand that it is just this kind of person that Sarah Gregory is, and we pray that you will be with her as she leaves at the end of this day, that she will go in your peace and with your grace. We do thank you for the people who have endeared themselves to us. We thank you also for those that we, if we're honest, have not liked, for those who are very different from us, for they have challenged us to listen intentionally, understand deeply, and think differently. We thank you for those whom we have yet to meet, for we know that each encounter has the potential to reveal more about what it means to live in community. Because of our gratitude for all your people, we lift up all those who suffer from illness or injury, who fear from uncertainty and change, who feel the pain of loneliness and loss. We seek your grace for ourselves as well, for we are people unfinished in your work of creation. We who are privileged to be loved by you seek your blessing for ourselves and all the world. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend Robinson, for being with us this week. We appreciate it very much. Would you please join me in the prayer?
I pray for you, the Lord, of the United States of America, and the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Ross.
President, may I have privilege of the floor?
Floor is yours, Mark.
My fellow senators, this morning is a solemn day, and this morning we're pausing to honor a former Marine, private security member who was killed in Iraq, serving his country recently, by protecting United States government personnel. Shane Stanfield of Cheyenne was killed in Iraq. Joining us this morning in the gallery is Shane's family. In the back gallery, it is with deep sadness that we join Shane's family in mourning his loss today. Shane was only 25 years old. He's remembered for his love of adventure. He was hardworking and a likable young man. Get along with anyone, but Shane may be best remembered for his kindness toward everyone. To honor Shane's memory, I'm asking that we observe a moment of silence on the floor of the Senate chamber this morning. We take this moment so that Shane's sacrifice and that of his families will be continued to be remembered and never taken for granted by the residents of the state of Wyoming. So if you would you please join me in a of silence. We must never forget the sacrifice made by Shane Stanfield or the countless other soldiers who were willingly placed their well-being of the nation above their own. We will not forget the sacrifices of their families who selfishly part with their loved ones in service of our country. All citizens of this nation owe the members of our military and their families everlasting debt. We recognize that our deepest gratitude cannot possibly begin to diminish Shane Stanfield's absence, but his memory will live on in our hearts and in the hearts of Wyoming residents, and we hope that this knowledge will provide his family with some measure of comfort during this difficult time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ross. On behalf of the Senate and his family, we extend our deepest sympathies. Reading correction and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 1st, 2007 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Perkins, chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is approved. Members of the Senate, our doctor for the day is Radu Tech Siegel, a medical doctor from Cheyenne. Our nurses, again, are Tony Walworth and Kay Hanks from the Wyoming State Hospital. Our thoughts for the day. A truly happy person is one who can enjoy the scenery on a detour. Senator Peterson.
I have the privilege of the floor.
The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's not often that my wife has ever come down and sat with us during a session, but I'd like to introduce the Senate and the staff to my wife, Cresta, if she'd stand, and my youngest son, Kyle, and please welcome them to the Senate with me.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, House Bill 172, Public Employee Retirement Purchase of Service Credit, sponsored by Representative Landon, was referred to Committee Number 10. It appears the subject matter deals with the retirement system and purchase of service credit in that. Mr. President, our committee has no special expertise in that. The Appropriations Committee has traditionally handled these bills as a matter of substance. I've spoken with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and he's willing, and so I rise to ask you to re-refer House Bill 172 from Committee 10 to Committee 2 as the first standing committee.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 172 is referred to Committee Number 2 as the first committee. Introduction, reading, and referencing the bill. Senator Senate File 1, first reading of the Senate File.
Senate File Number 1, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, General Government Appropriations, an act relating to supplemental appropriations for the operation of state government.
Senator Nicholas, we're on Senate File 1, the appropriations bill. Do you need that back in your committee, or would you prefer it go directly to Committee of the Whole?
Mr. Chairman, we prefer to go to Committee of the Whole. Thank you.
Senate File 1 is referred directly to Committee of the Whole for further consideration. Ms. Gregory, would you please come over here? Members of the Senate, we truly are fortunate that over the years, young people volunteer to take time out from their busy schedules, from their busy lives at home, and travel down here to help us. And it really truly is for our benefit, and I hope they enjoy it. I know that they work hard. They certainly make us look good. But today I would like to recognize Sarah Gregory, who has been our page for the last 2 weeks. By your leave, I'm going to read this resolution. A resolution to recognize Sarah Gregory's service as a page in the Wyoming State Senate. Be it resolved by the Senate of the 59th Legislature of the State of Wyoming. Whereas, Sarah has served as a page for the Senate from January 22, 2007 through February 2, 2007. Whereas, Sarah's service as a page has been exceptional and fully appreciated by the Wyoming Senators. Whereas, this resolution has the support of the members of the Senate of the Wyoming Legislature who have signed their names thereto. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the undersigned members of the Senate of the Legislature of the State of Wyoming, Section 1, that Sarah has served the Senate of the State of Wyoming with dignity and respect. Section 2, that Sarah's dedication will serve her well in her future endeavors. Therefore, with great appreciation, we recognize Sarah Gregory for her outstanding dedication and support to the State of Wyoming on this, the second day of February, 2007.
The president just told me that you guys have talked all week, and so now it was my turn. I suppose I could discuss telecommunications or something. But I just wanted to thank all of you. It's been a great experience, and I've learned a lot. I'm now even more so interested in the government. So thank you for making it a great two weeks.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 2nd, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 41 in gross, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Ullman, Barrasso, Feck, Hastert, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 2nd, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 40, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Ullman, Barrasso, Feck, Hastert, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 1st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 26, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Geist, Johnson, Perkins, and Basie, Senator Geist, Chairman. January the 31st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 165, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the two House bills that were just read into my committee, House Bill 40, sponsored by Select Committee on Developmental Programs, that's the title of it, sponsored by the committee of that name, and House Bill 41, Developmental Disabilities Emergency Services, sponsored by the Select Committee on Developmental Programs. Both those House bills have appropriations, and pursuant to Senate rules, I ask that they be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee.
Hearing no objection, so ordered. Bills on second reading. Senate File 78, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File number 78, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Telecommunications.
We do have three amendments. Second reading amendment number 1, the Senate File 78, the Meyer Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
Senate File 78, second reading amendment number 1 to substitute bill number 1, page 16, line 6.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second first reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 78 and ask the body favorable consideration.
Senator Meyer, we're on second reading. Hopefully you have
second reading amendment number 1. Mr. President, I'm trying to find that. Is that I've got second reading and third reading amendments, but I don't have a first reading amendment.
Are you calling for a question, Senator Meyer?
Mr. President, I've got it now. I have a proposed version, and it had me on the with the second rather than the first. One must have been withdrawn. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 78, ask for body favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into the area of the bill where it increases the time by 2 years in which the companies that have had the higher access rates and they need to get them down below 3 stamps. It gives them 2 more years to do that. There was an amendment yesterday that gave them 5 more years. I think this is a reasonable compromise. We'll give them a total of 4 years to implement that, so that hopefully there won't be so much sticker shock to the local consumers, and ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Discussion on Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, just a little bit better amendment than yesterday because it's a shorter amount of time, but
I've talked to the companies involved with this. I suggested that we get together on an amendment that provides for a transition plan. This just gives them 2 more years to do something that they've spent 11 years not doing. 11 years not doing. And in those 11 years, they have relied on the money provided by the people, the phone consumers all across Wyoming, so that they can have lower local rates in their zones than anybody else has in Wyoming. If you're paying $43 for your phone bill, and you pay the Universal Service Fund, and you make an intra-state call in Wyoming, you have done a marvelous job of helping customers who pay less for their local phone service than you do, considerably less, and have done so in direct, in my opinion, disregard for the intent of the previous telecommunications law, and have done it for 11 years. The prices that they charge for access on some of the companies is really no different than it was 11 years ago when we told them to get rid of long-distance to local subsidies. I suggest we resist this amendment. I hope the sponsor would get with those companies and come up with a phase-in plan. The 2 years would possibly be appropriate if we could have some kind of a phase-in. This just says we want to stay on the wagon until 2012. They've been on it since 1995.
Further discussion on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 78. Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, in part I agree with the good senator from Lander, but in part I guess that it wasn't so much the companies that failed the intent of the law, but rather they went through the procedures of doing a TS Lurie study. They were approved by our Public Service Commission, given the stamp of approval. The consumers that are in that area, yes, they've had the benefit of the Public Service Commission's ruling on that. However, I know exactly what these consumers are going to go through because I had to go through it and my constituents had to go through it. And I think that, yes, the phase-in plan would be something that we should consider so it doesn't happen to them all at once. They just put it off in 4 years, and indeed on third reading, you can come up with some language that certainly work with the good senator from Lander or from any of the companies and make sure that it is a incremental phase-in plan. But it should be over 4 years, so the date of 2012 wouldn't change in any case, and this just gets us halfway to where we want to be. Mr. President, I think that this is a reasonable compromise. It does need a little touch-up for third reading, but this is the right direction, and I hope that we would vote this amendment up.
The question is, on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 78, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 78 has failed. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 78, the Scott Meyer amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment in?
Senate File 78, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 17.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is deals with the sunset. And as the bill comes before you now, the sunset applies to the whole of the Telecommunications Act, the whole chapter. What this amendment does is apply it to just the section that deals with the deregulation procedures in the Act. And the reason for the amendment, the reason for the sunset date, Mr. President, is that the technology is changing rapidly enough here. So what is a sensible regulatory scheme today, in all probability, will not be once you get 8 to 10 years into the future. So we need a sunset date. And we need the sunset date so that we can drive a bill all the way through the legislature, past all the special interest lobbyists that swarm when we deal with this particular subject. And it was pointed out to me by a senator who probably knows more about it due to his interim work than I do, that if you repeal the whole chapter, the result is everything is totally deregulated, and there's some of the interest groups out there who might think that's a wonderful thing and oppose the bill going all the way through. Whereas if you just take out this section, there will be broad support for carrying a bill with revised regulations all the way through. So that's what this amendment seeks to do, and I would urge its adoption.
Discussion? On your case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would urge us to resist this amendment. Mr. President, the sunset that's in the bill you have before you was a product of work of the committee. We had discussion about sunsets in various portions of the Act. Frankly, personally, I was very concerned that this Act doesn't do anything with the Universal Service Fund, that the still the flaws that we talked about in Universal Service Fund for 10 years remain, and that this bill could potentially require more funds from the Universal Service Fund, impacting all the people in Wyoming. For that reason, I suggested a sunset on the Universal Service Fund so that we could deal with that. Well, that you can imagine how that discussion went, Mr. President, and actually the tall senator from Natrona County was adamant, absolutely adamant, that he didn't want to mess with the Universal Service Fund. I can understand why, coming from the rural district that he represents, and so many of us represent in Wyoming. The compromise was to the whole act, so that everything would be on the table together and we could have a balancing, because things are going to be so different that many years in the future. Just look how far we've came now. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, to go into Section 202, which is a competitive section, I want to put 202 in perspective to you. I honestly don't believe this is such a great regulatory section that much in advance of our law that we have now. The problem with the law that we have now is that the Public Service Commission has resisted using 202 as we intended it. That's my word, but I believe that firmly. What we've done now is to put even more restrictions on being able to use 202. I would argue to you that, yes, indeed, you're forcing the Commission to recognize that where there's more, there's actually three separate competitors in the market. Yes, for Pete's sake, finally admit that it's competitive. That's the big expansion of 202, to recognize where there are three competitors in the market, it is competitive. We don't need to regulate it. And it also provides the language in 202 that if those three competitors don't exist anymore, then they can't be deregulated using that clause of 202. It reverts back. It automatically fixes itself. It's the worst section to sunset in the bill, because how are you going to re-regulate things that have been competitive unless the underlying conditions of competition have changed? Unless there's no longer those three companies. This just sunsets the whole thing, the whole competitive section. I hope you'll resist it.
Further discussion on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 78. Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I think the previous remarks make the argument for the amendment. I urge its adoption.
Question is, on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 78, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 78 has failed to pass the Senate. Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 78, the Meyer Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 78, second reading amendment number 3, page 10, line 11.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President,
I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 78 and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, you were just passed out a sheet, probably right on top. It has to do with the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics. The question on the sheet is, what is a producer price index? Mr. President, the answer is, a producer price index is a family of indexes which measures the average change over time in selling prices received by domestic producers of goods and services. Mr. President, what we do in this amendment is to go in and reduce and take out the federal consumer price index and insert the wire telecommunications carriers index. This is a index, Mr. President, which does exactly what the handout says. It measures the change over time of selling prices. This particular area deals with the price that basically a wired telecommunications company can raise their prices over time. It matches up almost exactly with what the bill is trying to do, is to allow an increase over time in the selling price of wired telecommunications services and goods. This is what the index measures. I think it matches up perfectly, hand and glove fit. I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion. Senator Price.
Mr. President, I would only ask the sponsor of this legislation or this change, if it works for changing out the CPI, would it also be appropriate to look at page 14, Roman numeral section 4, and use the same language in that file?
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Case.
Mr. President, I haven't followed this index for some time. When I was working more active in the consulting area in another state, it was generally true that this index rose at a lower rate than the consumer price index because of technological advances in electronics and things. I can't maintain that to you right now. I can't say that one way or the other. I think that's a kind of an empirical question. We could look at the data. There is some appeal to having an index that's based upon landline telecommunications. The one caution I might point out is that Wyoming is a little bit of a different state than other places in the country, and has little different hurdles about cost and what have you. I guess I'm kind of neutral on this. I suspect, my guess is, and I don't know this for sure, that this would be a slightly lower increase in prices. But I'm a little bit hesitant to authorize a change, so we actually maybe had a handout that would say, in the past 10 years, this is what the CPI has done, and this is what the telecommunications price index has done, and then we could judge it. I don't want to represent to you that one would always be lower, so I'm a little bit hesitant. I think there's some third reading research that could be done on this, and we could have a better idea. It's a big, I don't know right now. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I was the one in committee who wrote the particular section, the particular amendment this proposed amendment is amending. And just so the Senate understands, I picked the Consumer Price Index strictly because it was an index that I was enough familiar with that I had some knowledge of what we were doing by putting it in there. It wasn't any great analysis, Mr. President, or rocket science. This is the one I've heard of before and have some knowledge of. I don't have the knowledge in this particular area that the past and current chairman of the Corporations Committees have. So I would say to the Senate, as you consider this amendment, don't consider that there was a great deal of thought that went into picking the Consumer Price Index that this more refined index is seeking to replace.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, the co-sponsor takes the second shot. I would point out the good senator from Laramie County raises a very decent point as well. The other reference, which is regards to non-competitive section, non-competitive services, actually does have hidden in those words that aren't very clear use of the telecommunications-based cost index. So I think the Laramie County senator raises a valid point. I'd like to see a little bit more research and what the numbers mean and probably look at being consistent in both sections.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Senator Meyer, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I did pull up the last 10 years, and it came off at two pages. That's one of the reasons why I didn't pass it out. It was a little disjointed because there was a graph in the top part that didn't print out. But I can tell the body what the differences were here. And the annual rate and index rate in 1996 was 118, and the rate index rate in 2006 was 99.8. So the index actually reduced itself, and it was a function, as was alluded to earlier, was that as technology increases, it actually costs less money to provide the same service because of the technology advances. So rather than the price of wire lines actually going up, in this particular case, the price of wire lines would go down. However, in the last 2 years, there's been a slight increase from 99.5 to 99, or 98.9 to 99.8. So it's gone up 9/10 in the last year, but over the course of 10 years, it has gone down over 18 points. So that's pretty much what we had. As technology has increased, the price went down, and then it stabled out, and now it's starting to come back up a little bit. But it does track exactly with the wire telecommunications selling prices. You can go on the U.S. Department of Labor Bureau of Statistics website and get all the information that you could possibly want to know about it. I do agree that was a good tip by the good senator from Laramie County, and I agree with the chairman of corporations that we probably should have this matched up in both places. So we're talking about apples and apples.
Question is, the third reading amendment, the second reading amendment, excuse me, number 3 to Senate File 78. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 78 has failed to pass the Senate. We are back on the bill. Senate File 78, having been read two separate times, Senator Casey.
Mr. President, briefly on one point, I mentioned yesterday I spoke about internet service providers in Wyoming, and I mentioned that they face a tremendous amount of competition from nationwide internet service providers, and I certainly question their viability in the markets on an ongoing basis. I think I also, though, neglected to say that these Wyoming-based companies are doing some marvelously innovative things, and they certainly provide more than just internet. And some of them provide network. The company over in Laramie that you've all received an email about, that company is run by one of the most amazing smart persons I've ever met in my life. He has a wireless-based system that uses these flat panel wireless antennas, and he is exceeding tremendous speed on internet and doing a wonderful job. He's been over here to legislature a couple times. He felt that I slighted his company, and I didn't say it as well as I should. I'm very impressed with what they do and what our other network-based internet service providers are doing in Wyoming. They're doing a marvelous job for us, and I just want the Senate to know that great innovations are happening right here in Wyoming. Thank you, Mr. President.
We are back on Senate File 78. Senate File 78 having been read two separate times. The question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 154, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File number 154, sponsored by Senator Scott, Small Employer Carrier Reinsurance Amendments.
Senate File 154, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall it be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Consent list today is Senate File 53, Credit Freeze Report Substitute Number 1, Senate File 141, Department of Audit Amendments, Senate File 146, Special District Requirements for Bids, and Senate File 167, Consumer Advocate Sunset Extension.
Senate File 53, Credit Freeze Report Substitute Number 1, Senate File 141, Department of Audit Amendments, Senate File 146, Special District Requirements for Bids, and Senate File 167, Consumer Advocate Sunset Extension, are all on the consent list. Would any senator like any one of those bills pulled off of the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 53, Credit Freeze Report, Substitute Number 1, Senate File 141, Department of Audit Amendments, Senate File 146, Special Districts, Requirements for Bids, and Senate File 167, Consumer Advocate Sunset Extension. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson. Aye. Almond.
Aye.
Barrasso.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Poe.
Excuse.
Cooper.
Aye.
Vicaria.
Aye.
Beck.
Aye.
Guys.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Job.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Massey.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Moffler. Nicholas.
Aye.
Heck excused. Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Sessions.
Aye.
Townsend.
Aye.
Vasey.
Aye.
Von Slatern.
Aye.
President Schiffer.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed on the consent list. 28 ayes. 2 excused. Senate File 53, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 53, 28 ayes, 2 excused. Senate File 141, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed, Senate File 141, 28 ayes, 2 excused. Senate File 146, are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 146. 24 ayes, 4 noes. 2 excused. And Senate File 167. Are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Meyer, aye to no. Moffler, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate file 167, 24 ayes, 4 noes, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Wyoming Senate, Senate File 53, Credit Freeze Report, Substitute Number 1, Senate File 141, Department of Audit Amendments, Senate File 146, Special Districts Requirements for Bids, and Senate File 167, Consumer Advocate Sunset Extensions, have passed the Senate. Senate File 118, third reading of the Senate File.
Senate File Number 118, sponsored by Senator Barrasso, Homicide During Pregnancy, an act relating to homicide, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We do have an amendment, third reading amendment number 1, the Senate File 118, the Moffler Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 118, third reading amendment number 1, delete the Scott second reading amendment.
Senator Moffler.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment. It might look a bit familiar, but it does have a very significant change. I think in the debate yesterday, one of the concerns was that this was not two felonies. And so what I've done with the amendment is made it very clear that there are two felonies involved. The first is the killing of the woman, and that is in our homicide statute. See, that is a very separate issue from what this bill attempts to address. So first, you do have the felony that is associated with the homicide of the woman. Secondly, and that's what this bill addresses, you have the felony of the person who knowingly does this because she and knows that she's pregnant. And so you have to recognize, and what we're doing with the amendment is we're recognizing that part of the reason this woman was killed was to terminate that pregnancy. And so what the amendment does is it, on line 12 through 14, it adds in there, and notwithstanding the filing of any indictment or information regarding the death of the mother. So it makes it very clear that there is an indictment against this person for killing the mother, or there is a grand jury investigation, which is the information regarding the death of the mother. So that is a separate crime. However, if this person is found guilty of killing the mother, automatically the second felony, because he knew she was pregnant, because it says that, he knew she was pregnant, he targeted her because she was pregnant, the second felony, which is 20 years to life, is added to the felony of having killed the mother. And that's essentially what the amendment does. And I hope what it does is takes out, again, some of the passion of the debate over this, the issue of the unborn child versus the fetus. And I hope that's what it does, because I, like probably most people here, find it abhorrent that someone would target a woman knowing or because she was pregnant. So I have no problem with enhancing and making this penalty very, very severe, but I would like to take out of it some of the controversial debate.
Discussion on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118. Senator Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't know whether I stand for or against this amendment. When I first read it, I was going to stand up against it. I want to make sure that when we go into this, that we address the fact that there's two hearts beating. That we're addressing that. When I first read it, I couldn't get that out of this amendment. But when I hear the explanation, I'm starting to see it. So, is there two hearts beating in the beginning, and are there two hearts killed in the end? And that's what I really want to know on this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Rouse.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think that I am speaking against this amendment. I appreciate the good senator from Laramie County. We talked about this last night, and I suggested that this amendment actually is better than the last amendment because it potentially has two separate offenses. The problem that I have with it is, and I've handed it around to all the lawyers in the legislature, as to what this really may do. And I am worried that what you do with this is that you take out two victims, in essence. And you probably make a defense lawyer, which I am not, dream of when you come into the courtroom of arguing a double jeopardy. Because in essence, you don't have two victims, I think, with this amendment. It is arguable, though, that you do have two separate felonies, and perhaps you have two different sets of elements that distinguish the two, but it becomes pretty gray, in my opinion, when you start looking at this. I recognize the intent, and I think it's well meant. I'm afraid that we're injecting into this situation a defense lawyer's dream of arguing double jeopardy, of being charged twice for the same act. And I submit to you that when you're looking at this, I mean, you have to ultimately the policy decision is one victim versus two victims. I happen to come down on the side of two victims.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. President, I have difficulty with the double jeopardy argument because I think if it was present with the bill as introduced, and I don't think it is there, you really haven't changed the basic elements of the crime because the amendment doesn't reach them. To be guilty of the crime, you have to have killed the pregnant woman, knowing that she's pregnant, and causing the involuntary termination of the woman's pregnancy without a live birth. Those are your elements. They aren't affected. You have a notwithstanding clause, which I think is just a clarification, and then a description saying it's a felony. And leaving the penalty the same as I read the amendment. So, Mr. President, tracking it through, and I hope the other real attorneys in the body will look at it very carefully, but my reading, and as the Senate knows, I'm not an attorney, my reading is that you haven't gotten yourself into a double jeopardy problem with this, unless you were in one with the bill to start with, and I don't think you were.
Further discussion on third reading, amendment number one to Senate Bill. Senator Barranza.
Mr. President, I rise to agree with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. As I read this, I want to speak against the amendment, and I think it gets to the heart of the matter of the bill. Are there two victims, or is there one victim with two crimes? And I want to tell you why I think that there is a difference, and I believe that there is a difference. And we had a young woman, I want to tell you about her. She's in her 30s, and she came to our committee room last Friday to visit with us, to visit with the Senate about what happened, and she wanted to tell us her story. She was driven here by a former member of this body, a member of this body who sat in that chair up there. She was a replacement member from the eastern part of this county. She filled a seat, and she was from the other side of the aisle. And when the young woman rose to speak, Mr. President, it really took an effort on her part. And she told us that it took an effort because she has cerebral palsy. It affected her body. It affected her speech. And we had to listen very carefully when she spoke, but we heard every word, Mr. President. She lives in Burns, Wyoming. She's a citizen of the state of Wyoming, and when
her mother was pregnant with her, with this woman who was in our committee room, when her mother was pregnant with her, her mother was brutally attacked. It was a knife attack. There was significant hemorrhage. The mother lost enough blood that it killed her. This young woman, who now lives in Wyoming, a resident of our state, also suffered from the loss of blood, but was born with cerebral palsy as a result of that attack. This woman works at the school in Burns. She assists with copying. She assists at lunch. And she came to the committee to tell the committee members, she said, I rose above it. I have a reason to be here. Well, Mr. President, she has a lot of reasons to be here. But one of the reasons is to remind us that when a pregnant woman is attacked, there are two victims. And when a pregnant woman is killed, there are two victims. And that's why I ask you to resist the amendment and vote for the bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, that didn't take much. I arise in opposition to this amendment. I thank the member from Laramie County here to explain it. And I can see now where the two hopes are not out of this amendment. So I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Further discussion on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118. Further discussion. Senator Moffitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I thank the tall senator from rural Natrona County. I think you have got to read this bill. It says, kills the mother and terminates the pregnancy involuntarily, and which means that there is no more pregnancy, there is no life there, there is nothing there. It is over because she has been killed. What this bill does is, originally, says if you kill the woman knowing she is pregnant and causes the involuntary termination of a pregnancy without a live birth, you are guilty of a second felony, which is punishable by 20 to life. You still have the exact same components in this bill as you had when you started, except for the contentious debate over whether it's a child with a beating heart or whether it's a fetus that is not viable. And that's what I was trying to take out of this debate. And that's what I think we should take out, because I really honestly believe that it is an important crime. You have killed a woman, partly because in many cases you didn't want to have the baby come to term. That, to me, is absolutely what we should be stopping. But we should not be putting into this the debate on the subject that most of us don't, well, many of us could never and could possibly never agree. I am definitely pro-choice. I don't think that's a secret to anyone in here. But I find that the entire concept of killing a woman because or in spite of the fact that you knew she was pregnant, abhorrent. But I can't get past bringing the debate in here, which really isn't relevant to what you're trying to do with the bill. You said the woman was killed, you knew she was pregnant, and you terminated that pregnancy. That's what this amendment does, is take out the passant. It still allows two felonies. They are not the same felony. You are not incurring double jeopardy. You have ended a pregnancy, and you have killed the woman. That is two separate felonies in this amendment. And I would ask that you support the amendment and move the bill forward.
Question is, on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. I'm going to ask for a division. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 118 has failed to pass the Senate. We are back on the bill. Senate File 118, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, Senator Nichols.
I apologize. We want to speak to the bill. My name. Ladies and gentlemen, I sort of struggled with this bill throughout the week. It's a very interesting bill that we have here. One which provides, as a basic first element, that to be guilty of this crime, you have to have killed a pregnant woman. So first thing you have to have done is you have to have created the elements of killing somebody. And then if you kill somebody, it causes the involuntary termination of a woman's pregnancy. You created arguably a second crime. And I wonder if you go back and look on where in any of your statutes where you'll find an element of a crime where you have to have first committed another crime to have now hit the second element. Now, we do aggravation of penalties under circumstances like this, enhancements of penalties, but I've never seen it in a situation like this. But principally, I oppose the bill for a more simple reason. When you do a statute like this, you've got to fast forward yourself and say, where are we going to be when the act is implemented? And last night and this morning as I think about it, it was pretty easy for me to fast forward because what I see is this. This issue of whether or not a fetus in the first trimester is a life or not is a hard issue. In my constituents, I've never known, I don't know now what the percentage on either side of the issue is, but let's say it's 50-50. And I attend a church, and even within that church, I don't know what the percentage is. It might be 50-50. But fast forward it now, you have the incidents where it happens. You've got a pregnant woman who was killed by some man who wanted to kill her because he wanted to terminate a problem. And the prosecutor now decides to prosecute both crimes. Now imagine what the jury selection is going to be like. The jury selection, I submit to you, is no longer about the conduct of the gentleman, the man, presumably, who killed the woman. Jury selection now is, can you or do you accept that a fetus or an embryo in the first trimester is in fact alive? And you're now trying to select a jury. Now, you have an obligation to sit as a juror, but you also have an obligation not to sit as a juror if you can't implement a statute. Imagine that 50% of the people who think that it was a heinous crime and they would like to sit on the jury and they think they ought to be sitting in the jury and this person ought to maybe have life in prison. But the entire 2 weeks to 3 weeks of jury selection is about this issue. It has nothing to do with the perpetrator of the crime. It's about whether or not you can sit as a juror because there happens to be a philosophical element. Now I go back to the crime itself. If your proposition is it ought to be a crime to terminate a pregnancy without a live birth, why does it make any difference if the woman was killed? Why do you have to put that as an element? Why not take that out as an element? Say whoever knowingly terminated a pregnancy caused the involuntary termination, that's now a crime. But why does it make it so much better simply by putting one more element in whoever kills any pregnant woman? If the crime can stand without that element, fair enough. That's what makes you would not be able to stand without that element. Willfully kills any pregnant woman. But there's a lot of good people here who could not sit on that jury because there's a philosophical problem they have. They might be willing to put that person in prison. They might be willing to put that person to the death penalty. But they couldn't sit on this jury because one element. One element is simply not likely to occur, but when it does, it gets great publicity, and no longer is this a case about that perpetrator. It's all about some philosophical debate that really doesn't belong in that trial or to that jury. I urge that you defeat the bill.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the bill, and And, you know, this debate has unfortunately been going down, I think, a path that is somewhat irrelevant of the right to life, pro-choice debate over Roe v. Wade and its holding. And as the Senate knows, I'm on the pro-choice side of that, as are the majority of the members, virtually all the members of my church. And that's really often where you stand in that debate, depends on which church you go to and what your personal religious beliefs are. But I can't see the argument that this bill is properly about that. And it seems to me that the argument we will have difficulty picking a jury because of that debate, Mr. President, is a little far-fetched. Look at the elements of the crime in the bill. You have to kill the woman. Now, it may well be a valid argument. It should have been written without that. It wasn't. It doesn't reach the circumstance that was most eloquently spoken about with the young lady who came and testified in our committee. We had a bill up there that would reach that particular circumstance, and there was strong opposition to it from, frankly, the Right to Life lobby. And we thought, well, no, we don't need that kind of a fight down here this year. We'll bring it back another time. But look at the elements of this crime. Kill a normal woman is pregnant. That's not a point and issue in that debate. And thereby causes the involuntary termination of the woman's pregnancy without a live birth. Was the pregnancy terminated? Was there a live birth? Where's the debate over the viability of the child or the fetus there? It's not there. I don't see it. And then you have, is guilty of, okay, then you have the description afterwards. Those aren't the elements of the crime. So I don't see, and on top of which, it now says homicide, unborn child or fetus, so you've got that base covered anyhow. So I think that argument's a little far-fetched. I think we need to come back and focus on the evil that this bill is seeking to punish. And that's a very real evil. And that's unfortunate. There are some people out there, usually but not always men, who are so criminal that they would kill a woman because she is pregnant and they think they might be responsible for the child and they don't want that, they shirk that responsibility. Those people are evil, and they deserve, they've committed a heinous crime, and they deserve the extra punishment this legislation would provide. I urge you to adopt the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. President. There are some other laws and problems out there in society where we put things together. For a long time, if you did a collapsed store, and maybe it'll be this in Wyoming, but it's done around the country. You went in and robbed somebody, you went to jail for that. And then people started adding, well, if you robbed them and used a gun, then you get a little bit extra because you used that gun in that robbery. And that seems to, you know, gone through our society that, yeah, you can't use a gun. So using the argument that we heard here a few minutes ago on the jury selection will be the same thing. We're going to worry about the fact that now that if we had a law like that, that we would spend 2 weeks on whether you had the right to own and bear arms, which is another one of these arguments we have. That's not here. What we're talking about here is two murders. It's all we're talking about. It's not. We're not going out there, reaching out there into those other areas. There's two people with two beating hearts, and now both of them have stopped. You have to stop the first one to get the second one to start. I would urge you that you would vote yes on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I've sat and listened to to the debate back and forth, but there's two things I'd like to say. One is, do not dare tell me, because I have a certain religious belief, that I don't have a choice in this world. And I'll tell you what I deeply resent is I deeply resent laws that take the choice from my family and myself making those decisions for what's best for us. And you cannot tie it to certain churches. And I deeply resent those kinds of accusations. But the other thing about this, and it was brought up, and I'm answering it. But I'll tell you something else about this. With this time, I have raised three children. I raised them in a loving home, fortunately. But I'll tell you what, I want a clean prosecution. I want the ability for first-degree murder. I want the ability for life without parole. I want the ability for maybe for the death sentence for this type of a crime. And I said one more time, and I used the word muck. Now we have mucked up, or we have muddied the straight prosecution. The ability to go straight for the jugular for a human being who does this. And so I would urge the defeat of this bill, and let our prosecutors and our legal system work to do that. And there isn't a prosecutor in this state that would not go straight for the heinous crime and the punishment involved in this type of a crime, and nothing else should deter him from doing that. And for those reasons, I would urge us to vote no on this bill.
Further discussion? I'm kind of Senator Barrasso.
Mr. President, there is a handout that was sent out, state homicide laws that recognize unborn victims underneath it says fetal homicide. This is the December 30th, 2006. It goes through the 24 states where there is full coverage of unborn victims, and then another 10 states where there is a full partial coverage for unborn victims. It addresses some of the issues, but in all of these states, they've been able to select a jury, find a jury, and move forward. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion on Senate File 118. Senate File 118, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson?
Aye.
Allman?
Aye.
Barrasso?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
Excuse me.
Cooper?
Aye.
DiCaria? Beck, Geis, Pastor, Hines, Jennings, Joe, Johnson, Larson, Massey, Meyer, Mockler, Nicholas, Peck excused, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Scott, Sessions, Thompson, Vasey?
No.
Von Slatern?
No.
President Schiffer?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 16 ayes, 12 noes, and 2 excused.
Senate File 118. Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Wyoming Senate, Senate File 118 has passed the Senate. Bills on third consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that point of business of the consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move
for the Senate to resolve itself into committee of the whole. The motion is for the Senate to resolve itself into committee of the whole. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Senator Peck.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 139. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File Number 139, sponsored by Senator Barrasso, Real Estate Agent Errors and Omissions Insurance, an act relating to real estate brokers and salesmen. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 139. There is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that it be read in full.
Yes, reading clerk will read the amendment.
Senate File 139, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 8.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 139. I would yield to the good senator from the only one left on the floor practically over there from Natrona County, Senator Barrasso, for an explanation of this bill, and he'll handle the amendment too.
Senator Barrasso.
Insurance. So what we want to do is make that insurance available because we want to make sure that folks all around the state of Wyoming, if they go to a realtor and if there is an error, that there is in fact insurance.
Point of order. I'm sorry. No, sir. You're one short.
Mr. Chairman, we have a realtor in the audience from Johnson County who is visited with the other evening talking about just how important it is that all realtors have insurance and we want to find a way to make it available and affordable to them. That's a consumer protection as well as giving them the opportunity to buy insurance at a reasonable rate. Current premiums in Wyoming range anywhere from $188 to $2,000. So what we're bringing here is a bill that says let's find a way to make sure that all of the real estate brokers and salespeople around Wyoming are insured, and let's find a way to make that insurance cheap for them. About 12 other states have this same situation where they're asking and requiring all of the agents around the state to have insurance. And the way they're able to get the insurance very cheaply is then as that group can work with a company. There is a company that supplies insurance and sells it to 11 of the 12 states where they have this regulation, and they've been able to get it very cheaply. So I bring this to you on behalf of consumers, but also as the handout that you've gotten shows this is endorsed by the Wyoming and Sobriety, the association that deals with realtors, as well as the Real Estate Commission, and in the committee, realtors testified in favor of the bill, as did the chairman of the commission. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for questions. Now, there is an amendment, and it has to do with when realtors renew their license. The bill is written said their annual renewal, but they don't renew for 3 years, so we're removing the word annual. The other part of the amendment has to do that there'll be a slight fee charged by the commission, by the real estate commission, to handle all of this. I think the legislation says something about
a maximum of $10, and we're going to change that to a maximum of 10% of the fee. So with that, I'd move the amendment and ask for your favorable consideration of the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Barrasso's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 139 is passed. We are back on the bill.
I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman, and if there are none, I'd ask to call the question on the bill.
Question has been called. All those in favor of Senator Chase's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 139, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate File 139 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 26.
Senate File Number 26, sponsored by the Transportation Committee, Ports of Entry Mutual Aid Agreements, an act relating to the Department of Transportation. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barrasso, Geis, Hastert, Johnson, Von Flavern, Senator Barrasso, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Barrasso.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 26, Ports of Entry, and for discussion of the Senate File, Senator Von Flavern.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is an amendment. I'll ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 26, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 13.
And Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 26 and ask for the body's favorable vote on this. And I'll explain with the floor, Mr. Chairman. This bill is a request, came as a request from YDOT. We built a port of entry north of Sheridan that's being used by both the state of Montana and by the state of Wyoming, being run by the state of Wyoming and operated by the state of Wyoming. And it's about roughly 15 miles north of Sheridan. After the several years of planning for this and finally building it, they realized they couldn't semi-legally or legally operate this. They didn't have a mutual memorandum of understanding between the two states on how it would operate. So what this bill, Ports of Entry Mutual Aid Agreement, it sets it up to allow for the mutual memorandum of understanding between different states, not particularly Montana. It wasn't named in this, but that's the one we're doing right now. So the bill simply says that the department may enter into mutual aid agreements with adjoining states to provide for the construction and joint operations of port of entry located near the borders of the party states. So if it happens in the future that we open one near Cokeville or in that general area, we could run that with Idaho. Same east of here, we could run it with Nebraska. So they put in very generic language that allowed for this to happen. But you'll notice page 2, line 12, it does say the agreement shall be submitted to and receive the approval of the Attorney General and the Governor. So it has great oversight. And subsection E, little I's, Romanet 2, Romanet 3 on page 2, just go into durations, the purpose of the agreement, manner of financing. Page 3 does the same thing, just further provisions of the method to be employed in accomplishing this, provisions for administrating, and so forth through that page. And then it talks on, we'll point out on page 3, line 16, Romanet 8, 13, excuse me, it goes in Romanet 8, to respect the liability of each party to the agreement for the actions of the port of entry employees, the liability remains with respect to states. And then on page 4, Romanet 10 does talk about the exact change of command or delegation of authority to be followed by the port of entry employees acting under the provisions of this agreement. And then Romanet 11, the enforcement authority, Romanet 12, and then any other necessary and proper matters. Where the amendment comes in is on page 4, line 13. There was a little bit of difference in languages between the states as far as commercial vehicles and size and weight laws. So we took out, we strike on page 4, line 13, after enforced, insert commercial, so you have enforced commercial vehicles, after vehicle, insert, and size and weight. So the line will read, state to enforce commercial vehicle and size and weight laws, and that made it in line with the other states. Once again, on line 18, we had to make that same change, and the amendment is page 4, line 18, to put in, after violation of that, insert commercial vehicle or size and weight laws of the appropriate state. And page 5 goes into may appoint an out-of-state special enforcement officer to issue summons provided in subsection B of this section at a joint port of entry located in an adjoining state. Right now, the only port of entry that is being handled or being run for the benefit of two states is the one north of Sheridan, and we are the employees of all employees of YDOT. I will point out on line page 5 that things like powers, duties, rights, privileges, and immunities will be comparable between the states, and so cover our employees should they actually enter the state of Montana. They'll have the same powers, duties, rights, privileges, and immunities, and that will go for the reciprocating state in this agreement. One thing I will mention is special officers, which page 4, subsection F, does mention a special enforcement officer appointed under this subsection. Special enforcement officer is not one that has a vehicle, has the lights, goes chases people down. He's not a law enforcement officer. He issues summons. He will be stationed in the port of entry. And so we had to thought that maybe this had something to do with actual enforcement by a police officer, and it does. They do not have those same duties and responsibilities. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will stand for questions.
Any questions, comments, questions? All those in favor of Senator Clayton's motion to accept the standing committee amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're back on the bill. Any discussion on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Barrasso's motion, and the committee of the whole right to report that it's used over the favorable recommendation of Senate file 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Senate file 26 is passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 101. The clerk will read the file.
Senate file number 101, sponsored by Senator Jennings, child predator tracking, an act relating to persons convicted of criminal offenses against a minor. It was referred to committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Sessions, and Ross, Senator Ross, Chairman. It was re-referred to committee number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Meyer, Peterson, Townsend, no, Senator Job, and Nicholas, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise report, it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 101. There is a standing committee amendment from committee number 1 and ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 101, standing committee amendment number 1, page 4, line 1.
Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment number 1. And for an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment, I yield to the good senator, Senator Jordan County.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Start out with a couple of quotes. In my estimation, we must protect society from these monsters, and the only effective way to do so is to impose punishment to forever separate them from our most vulnerable members of society, who many times cannot protect themselves for much older and much more intelligent criminals. That is a quote from our governor in front of the Joint Judiciary Committee about child molesters. She also goes on to say that we have to protect our children from these criminals. Bridgeport said, I'm convinced that the only way to do so is to pursue sentences that separate them from society. You notice on your handout here, there's two news releases about a roundup that the federal government did in two different regions of the country. And in those two roundups, just a few days each, they rounded up over 2,000 sex offenders that were supposed to be registered that have not. We've lost track of them. They were just wandering around out there. In Detroit County, our assistant district attorney gets calls on a pretty regular basis about what is the law in Wyoming concerning sex offenders. A quote from an email he sent me here kind of went through a couple of them. He said, on one specific occasion, a Florida registrant contacted this office to discuss the Wyoming Sex Offender Registration Act. He subsequently moved to Wyoming. A short time later, he called our office to ask a question, indicated that it was much easier to live here, and that he was going to call a buddy, another registrant in Florida, and get him to move here. Another occasion, he received a phone call from an unidentified person who asked if we required individuals convicted of indecent exposure to register. Upon advising him that under current Wyoming law, indecent exposure is not a registrable offense, he replied, "You're kidding, thanks," and hung up. So we have to deal with this on a pretty regular basis. We know that there are folks out there from these phone calls that are convicted child sex offenders that probably should be registered someplace, that are shopping around the country to find a better place to live. And the reason that they're doing that is that several years ago, we've all heard about what happened to Jessica Lunsford, that when they were looking for this young girl that was kidnapped and eventually killed, they went across the street to a neighbor's house because she had a brother that they found had been convicted of a child sex offense. And they went to the front door and they knocked on the door and they said, "Have you seen your brother?" She said, "No, I haven't seen him in months." "Okay, thanks," and they're gone. Well, in reality, young Jessica Lunsford was still in the back of the house with the sex offender brother of this girl, and they think, law enforcement thinks at that time she was still alive. Now, had that sex offender had an ankle tracking bracelet on, there wouldn't have been a knock on the front door. Instead, "Have you seen your brother?" What there would have been, because they could have looked on the system and found, because of his tracking bracelet, that he was actually in that house, there would have been a court order and a search warrant, and they would have gone in that house, and they would have registered young Jessica, and she probably would be alive today. So in Arizona just recently, we saw in the paper where a young girl was texting. The mother said, "Here, take my girl to school," from a fellow that had been in the area for 2 or 3 days. Turned out he's a registered sex offender, and rather than taking him or the young lady to school, he took her down the road. Luckily, that young lady was found wandering down a road by herself crying, and she had been abused, but she had not been killed, like most of, like a lot of them do. So these folks were out there looking and throwing. This is one of my favorites. This was in local paper here, state paper here, last week or so. This guy here in this picture looked young, but actually about 29, and he was convicted of a sex offense. And while he was in prison, he got with another fella who'd been convicted of a sex offense, and they got this really good idea that when they got out, what they would do, because this guy looked so young, that they were going to register him in high school. And then he'd go throw him in high school. And he'd find the best candidates and then invite them home. Luckily, the high school kind of looked at that and they frowned a little bit and said, "Well, I'm not sure you really look at your, you might be a little older than that, you're kind of young, but you're not that young." So the school ended up turning him in. Sure enough, they hatched all this out. But because he was convicted before, if he had walked in that school under what we're proposing in his bill, his ankle bracelet would have set off all the alarms, and the cops would have been standing there saying, no, that's not even private. So what we have is we have a piece of society that steals children and abuses them and then discards them. We all heard about the one in Missouri where this guy had a young boy in his house for 4 or 5 years. And it wasn't until he went out and snatched another kid that they found him and stayed both of them. So if we go to the bill, Senate File 101, there is a Standing Committee amendment. And what I'd like to do is just go through that amendment, work that amendment in as we go through the bill. And the first reason that we came up with the amendment is that the Attorney General took a look at the language that we had in there, and basically what we did is that we assigned duties to the Director of Corrections rather than assigning it to Corrections. So that's where the amendment started. And what we're going to do, as you can see on page 2, we're going to create a section in the Corrections Department, and we've had lots of discussion in the state of where to put it. Corrections is already doing some monitoring with some passive units in certain areas, so they have a little bit of experience with this. And so on, with the Attorney General and a couple of meetings that we've had there, we all agreed that corrections would be the best way to put these. So we're going to create this program and put it in corrections. And if you are convicted of child sex offense, which we saw that bill go through earlier, and you're put on the registry for that conviction, then you get an ankle bracelet. So as we go through the bill, you'll notice that there's nothing about extending it, the penalty phase or additional penalties, it puts to the registry. So if you're on the registry, child sex offender, you get an ankle bracelet. You notice that in Section B, that we're going to let authorized people put them on. And then in C, if we're talking about if you're convicted and you will wear the bracelet. It also says that you're going to pay for the bracelet. Now, the technology that we talked about this same thing last year has really gotten a lot better, and the price seems to be coming down. So right now we have a price tag of, well, last year was about $15 a day. Now we're down to $8 a day range for an active unit. And the active unit means that you can be any place at any time and look on the computer and see that where that person is. And if a person walks into a sex offender free zone, which we'll cover here in a minute, then his equipment will start buzzing and everything goes through the computer. And local law enforcement agencies are notified, and we go drag that guy out of the sex offender free zone. We get the court will have the option of telling this guy that he has to pay for it, or decide that he can't pay for it. Some of these folks that like to call into our assistant district attorney are bouncing around the country, and a lot of times don't stay in one place or keep a job down too long. So those folks are not, they're going to come in and tell the judge they can't afford it. At that point, the judge can offer this person the ability to do community service at $5 an hour to pay for his ankle bracelet. So he goes in and does an hour's worth of community service every day, he's done. Not that hard. Not that big of an impact on him. In the section D on page 3, we start to go into what a sex offender free zone would be. And in this bill, what we're calling a sex offender free zone is 1,000 feet of the boundaries of the real property, and as it goes over to page 4, used as a daycare, as a school for education of any student from preschool through 12th grade. Now here's where the first part of the amendment comes in there. On line 3, page 4, we're going to put a period after grade and delete the rest of that sentence down into line 4. The reason that that came up is because in some areas where there has been the ability for local jurisdiction or some jurisdiction to start adding to, they've actually built walls around the towns with sex offender free zones. The first one was the school, and then it was the park, and then it was the library. And we're going to be saddled with a lot of these requirements when the Adam laws start to come to us and we start to interpret how we have to do this. So what the thought was there is, let's ease into it. Let's pick the places where the children are the most, and let's protect them there. If there's a need for the sex offender to go through a zone, and this is the example that I don't like the most, but it happens. If you actually have a convicted child sex offender who has a child who needs to take him to school, we need to be able to let that person take him to school. Well, it's easy. We program it into the computer. We give him a certain amount of time to get in and out. On occasions, you may want to, this person may have to go to the doctor's office. Hopefully, he's going to his therapist that might be next to a school or in that area. But at that point, you need to let him in. If that's the guy that may have a parent that may have a child in the school, what you may do there is you may have a school play or a presentation by the class that he wants to go to. He can call the 800 number, say, I want to go to the class. They'll call back to the cops, say, they really want to, say yes. And they can make that decision whether to let them in and out of those zones for that type of reason. It may just be as simple as he needs to drive across the zone on his way to work. The offender who's required to travel within a sex offender free zone is conditional of employment or medical, and then we added or educational or other reasonable purposes, and then we added necessity to conduct other basic requirements of life established by, and then here's where we took out the first, where we had the director, and we took that out and put it in as rule. So it would not be by the director of the Department of Correction, it would be by the rule of the Department of Correction. And he still travels in that zone for a period of, and you'll see I'm still on page 4, line 9, where we struck Dean for a period, and then added after that period of time necessary to complete the task. Now, we added another piece that comes in at the end of that sentence now that was an interesting question that came up in committee. What if you build this sex offender free zone and you've got a guy living in it? He owns a house and he lives in it because you can't be in that zone, so you can't live in that zone. So you can't just go dig his house away from him, but you can't put an ankle bracelet on him and keep track of him in there. So we added in there on line 8, we added an offender that has completed a contract to purchase a home within a sex offender free zone prior to the effective date of this act shall be granted an exception to continue residency within this sex offender free zone. You own your house, there's not a lot we can do about it to crack. So if we go through the rest of page 4, you see on line 14, found another place where we had director and foot rule. And then on line 22, we just struck the director of, so it would read the Department of Corrections. Then as we go to page 5, now we're telling the Department of Corrections what we want them to do when they create these rules. So on line 1, under little I, there are standards and procedures we added regarding the use of the assigned global positioning monitoring device. And then we added in there, this is only fair to these guys, we added to ensure persons assigned a device are aware of the requirements of registration of this section and rules adopted pursuant to this section. Wouldn't be too fair to put an ankle bracelet on the guy and then say, wander around out there and take your chances and find me a sex offender free zone. So when he gets his bracelet, he's also going to get a copy of the rules, and he's also going to get a map or something that says, here's all the zones. Is there a zone that you need to go through for work or medical reasons or education or whatever? Let's find them now. Let's get you programmed now.
As we go down through, we also want them to develop standards regarding the removal. What happens when a sex offender comes to you and says, I'm leaving the state? I stopped rent. I found a better one to live in. Wyoming's got some stuff, or other reasons. Well, you're going to have to take that off. Well, if he tells you where he's going, and this happens to be another state that has a program, there's, by the way, 22 states that are already doing something like this. So if he's going to go to one of those other 22 states, we could actually call ahead, and if he's on the same system that Wyoming's on, we could give those folks the option of leaving the bracelet on him until he got there and checked in, and when he got there and checked in, we just put the account over to them. Or we could, if they don't have tracking in their state or they use a different vendor, then we could go, we could say, make a deal with them that he will come report into you on a certain date, and here's how you take the bracelet off, and it's really hard. There's four little step screws, and you unscrew them out of the strap, and you undo the strap. The minute you undo the strap, then about 2.5 minutes later, all the alarms go out. So you get the guys on the other end, the 800 members, said, okay, we're removing the strap to send it back to Wyoming. They take the strap off, and at that point, he's there. So we've been able to help them track him up to that point where he reported. So if you have a state that's not tracking, this is one of those added benefits that Wyoming can give to those states as we pass that offender onto them. We're also going to have the Corrections Department come up in their rules, standard times regarding authorized, on line 8, little Romanet 3, standard, we struck standard, then we made it standard time, regarding authorized travel within sex offender free zones and other travel by offenders. And this comes back to the computer. If they need to be in and out of zones for some reason or other, then we'll program that in. We also need to develop the procedures for notification of local law enforcement agencies. And this is kind of a cool part of this technology. If you walk into a zone and you're not supposed to be there, your equipment will start to beep. So you know you've entered the wrong zone. And some of the equipment that we've looked at has got a little button on it, and you push that button to acknowledge you walk into that zone by mistake. So I guess you call that the whoops button. So you hit your whoops button, and then you can go back and call in on 800 number and say, I wandered into one. You know, don't make that count, because if you get a guy that wanders into, purposely wanders into these a couple of times, we're going to put them back in jail because they can't seem to stay off the zones. So we need to set that up, and it's easily set up, it's programming the computer. You need to know who you need to notify. Because if we have a sex offender, say, in Natrona County, and we've got him logged into the system, and he wanders into a sex offender free zone in Laramie County, we're not going to call the cops in Casper, we're going to call them in Cheyenne. So the zone itself is actually programmed to who to call. Now, we could take this even one step further if we wanted to. When I was talking to the safety officer in Natrona County District Number 1, he said, told me that one of the biggest problems with sex offenders in schools is that when the registry comes out and there's a new guy on the registry, he gets the paper, and he has to copy that paper and send it down to all the principals. Then the principals have to take the paper and see where this guy's living and see if that guy's living in their school zone or school area. And then that's it. There's nothing else that they can do. So what we could do with the notification is that we could actually extend this notification in the school. So a convicted sex offender walks in with an ankle bracelet. All the alarms go off. The local law enforcement contacted, but we also send a text message or an email or whatnot to the school. The principal and then can put the school on alert. We've got a sex offender within 1,000 feet of our boundary. Get a couple more adults on the ground. Get looking for them. Oh, by the way, here's a picture off the registry. You see this kid around our children. The cops are on their way. So it's a way that we can put some of that security in the school that we've been talking about that we need. We also going to say that
if your buddy comes to you and says that, you know, I figured out how to get around these ankle bracelets, and I can get your ankle bracelet off and back together before it sends a signal, which you really can't, then we're gonna find them as a misdemeanor, and we're gonna find them up to $750 and a year in jail or both. So in our rules, when we give to the guy wearing the ankle bracelet, we got to explain to him. So far, nobody's really figured out how to do this. And even if you have figured out how to do it, when we catch you, if we're doing it, you know, the guy that helps you go to jail. So other than the appropriation, that is the bill and the amendments. So I would ask stand for questions on the amendment or move the amendment.
Senator Johnson, I believe you would ask for privilege of the floor, and that is so granted since the agency I work for has an outstanding relationship with what you're about to introduce.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to all of the things I admire you for, you can read my mind. I don't like that. Mr. Chairman, thank you for privilege of the floor. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, I know that you're very much aware of the relationship between Cheyenne and F.E. Warren Air Force Base. It started back in the days when the railroad came through and they established Fort D.H. Russell to protect the area from the marauding Indians. And the history of the fort from D.H. Russell to F.E. Warren has been absolutely fascinating. Now we have at Warren and have had for an awfully long time the 90th Base Command. Close enough. Okay. One of the units out there, the 90th Security Forces Group, was asked if they had ever been to a citizens' legislature, and they had said no. So they were invited to come to the Capitol building today and observe the House and observe the Senate and to be acknowledged by all of us. And I'm going to ask them to stand as I introduce them. And these are the command group for the 90th Security Forces Group, Warren Air Force Base. I'll start out with Colonel Alan Jamerson, the commander. Lieutenant Colonel Andre Schiff, the Deputy Commander. Major Andrew Hugg, Commander of the 790th Missile Security Forces Squadron. Major Joseph Gallagher, Commander, Ground Missile Training Squadron. Captain Matthew Pignataro. Was that close?
Very close.
Thank you. Commander, Tactical Response Force, Lieutenant Benjamin Washburn, Operations Officer, Chief Master Sergeant Terry Yard, Group Superintendent for the 90th Security Forces Group, and Chief Master Sergeant Daniel Galvin, Superintendent for the 90th Missile Security Forces Squadron. Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, please welcome these warriors.
Johnson, thank you very much. Colonel, welcome. We're back on Senate File 101 and Senator Jennings' Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Is there any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Questions is called. Motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill. I believe there's a second Standing Committee Amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Yeah, amendment right into the
Senate File 101, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move set standing committee amendment number 2 to Senate File 101. Folks, what the Appropriations Committee did was lower the appropriation from $4.8 million to $400,000. There are several reasons for that. The testimony right now is that what you're really talking about is both a program and the implementation of the use of these active system bracelets. The Department of Corrections already is familiar with a passive system, so that you have a passive bracelet that can detect people when they want through a GPS unit. The notion here is that there's a class of people who deserve higher scrutiny, that we want to have an active system watching them where they go minute by minute, day by day. The difference in price is, first of all, you have to go out to a proprietary system, so there are folks out there that have programs and have GPS units and have schools programmed into their GPS displays. And these systems would cost you about $15 a day for a bracelet of this sort, about $5,400 a year. A passive system that's already employed would be closer to about $3 a day. The testimony was from the Department of Corrections, that they thought they could find these systems closer to about $9 a day. And finally, the issue is whether or not you're going to take a class of people that have a common crime and require that all of them have these action system bracelets. The testimony was that maybe we ought to be looking at, when you start looking at this kind of cost, maybe we ought to have a risk assessment to determine which of these folks are what they would call a situational pedophile versus a preferential one. Notion that one group is not as likely to reoffend and be at risk, whereas the preferential offenders certainly are people that we might want to take a look at. So before the Appropriations Committee was prepared to recommend the implementation of an entirely new program to require an entire group to have active bracelets, we think that we ought to take a look at the system, go out and maybe figure out what the real cost is, and identify some of the do some sort of risk assessment to figure out who's appropriate and who's not appropriate for these systems. And based upon that, we thought $400,000 would be a sufficient amount to go out and begin taking a look at it and have a better plan before we implement it.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I can't believe I'm standing here saying that I think you should cut over $4 million off my program. I think you should. And when we had the discussion in appropriations, it was kind of along the same lines as we had last year in appropriations. And this is the same type of idea that we came out last year. And by the way, it was just a committed the whole listing and an adjournment someplace other than here that just didn't go through last year. So I would encourage you to vote yes on this amendment, and then I will bring an amendment right after this to show you how we can do this with the appropriation.
Other discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. A motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 101 has passed. We're back on the bill. I believe there is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Would the reading clerk please read that in?
Senate File 101, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 on Senate File 101. And ask for favorable consideration. What this amendment does is it tracks back with the appropriations, and it develops a pilot project in Natrona County. And Natrona County has one of the highest rates in a concentrated area for child sex offenders. We have local folks that are willing to work on this program to stay within the appropriations. We're going to ask some of them to financially cooperate with this program. So I think this is the way that we go get the information. As I said before,
as the Adam Wall stuff comes out of this in the next, you know, next few years, there's going to be questions on how do we do the monitoring of these sex offenders. This will give Wyoming the data. Part of what we need to look at in this, as was brought up by the good senator from Alder County, is we do have passing systems. It tells you at any given time where anybody is. We also have an active system where it tells you where you are. A passive system basically is the same equipment, but it doesn't broadcast out. If you wear the equipment and it records your movements for the entire day, and then in the evening, when you get ready to charge your battery, you stick it in the battery charger. That also has a phone modem on it, and it downloads every place you've been during the day. So what we would do in the pilot project is determine, is there a level so that we can spend the state's money properly, that we're protecting our kids from this real bad group, and are we just monitoring the ones trying to decide, you know, if they behave, you know, if they've committed once, because, you know, now with the legislation talking about those through the second time you're back in the slammer. But if you've done it once and we're watching you, and it was something that the judge decided that wasn't that bad, we'll give him the leeway of active or passive. That's the kind of thing that we can find out in this pilot program. So I would I stand for questions and urge your favorable vote on this amendment.
Discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment, number one. Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I applaud the sponsor for pursuing this, what we need to do. In the course of the pilot project, is there some way to track, I'm not sure what the right terms are, but there are those predators that take advantage of a situation. For example, they move in with a family, or they marry into a family, or whatever, and they go after it. This is an occurrence that happens, for example, because of living conditions. Then there are those predators that go out and track and recruit victims. And is there some way in your pilot project you can differentiate, as we track and gather information, between those ones that take advantage, and that other category out there that goes out and recruits, and I've forgotten the word they use, but there's a word, where they really go out and actively seek victims. Can we do the pilot? Can we differentiate between these two groups I'm talking about? And what I really want to know is how effective it is, one group compared to the other, or does it really pay on what I call them, the guys that are going out. So.
Senator Jennings.
Chairman, thank you, Mr. President. That was a great segue into what some of the things that we can do with this. They have trending that you can get as part of the service. And one of the examples of trending that they used was they had a guy in a state that had to wear an ankle bracelet because of the child sex offense. And rather than putting him on drones, they put him in house arrest, but they allowed him to go to work. So at a certain time every day, he could leave the house, he'd go to work, and then when he's done at work, he had enough time to get back home, stop at the grocery store and gas station, whatever he needed to do, and get back home. So what he did is he went to work after a couple months and said, I got too many hours, or, you know, one way or another, he convinced him to peel off about 2.5 hours a day of his work schedule. Well, his employer didn't turn it in to anybody. He didn't turn it in to anybody. And what he did with that extra 2.5 hours, he just stopped by the city park. And he parked at the edge of the park, and he sat there and he watched the kid. He was broken. He was out, like you asked, he was out looking for his next victim. But he thought, you know, because he thought he was so smart, he got that extra hour, a couple hours there, that they still think he was at work, and he knew nobody at work turned him in. Well, what they did is they trended him. So he was supposed to be going from home to work,
from work to the grocery store, gas station, back home. And they started training him, and they saw him park at the park every day for about 2 hours. So about a week or so of this, they notified the local law enforcement, said, you've got one of your guys on house arrest, and he's not at work. He's sitting there at the city park where the kids are. And they went in, and they used the evidence off of the tracking system to put him back in prison. So yes, sir, there are plenty of provisions in there, and I do believe that in the population of Daytona County, that we can get some data out of that that we can use in the final report.
Other discussion? Are you ready for questions? Senator Vickson.
And I apologize, but on these handouts, we get these handouts, and I guess a question for the sponsor, who is very knowledgeable about this, that, you know, it says 11,000 people wanted for violent sexual crimes were among 9,000 fugitives in a week-long roundup, and then on the second page it says 10,000 fugitives were rounded up on a week-long roundup. And then it also says down in there that it says officials wanted to conduct a roundup in the fall before the start of winter weather in the northeast United States. I guess my question is that if these guys are dangerous guys, but why do we wait for roundups? And would these bracelets help with the roundup?
Senator Jennings?
Mr. Chairman, if they had a bracelet on them, you wouldn't have to round them up. What's happening in what we're doing in tracking these child sex offenders is we're in the beginning of the program. With all the animal stuff that's coming through, that's what spurred these roundups, is that let's go find them. Well, now these guys are identified because they were convicted sex offenders that were supposed to be registered, and they didn't register. And that's what we have. We have these guys floating around the country that left the state. It's kind of like, you know, when you drove through a state, you got a speeding ticket in that state. You didn't pay, you ignored it because you knew that state would never talk to Wyoming. Well, now we don't do that. Now that all the computers talk to each other, you drive through that state, you know, they'll eventually come get you to their trade date. Same type of idea here. These guys would leave a state where they were registered and just not come back. We used to have on the Natrona County Registry, we had a guy that was convicted, and this is a pretty bad guy, and he was convicted of child sex offenses, and he went up to the Bighorn Mountain off of the Wind River Indian Reservation and went on. And we haven't seen him since. Now, chances are he got up there and something fell on him or a wolf ate him or something like that, but he's gone. He's been taken off of the Tony County's Register because we can't find him, which is great. If he'd had a tracking bracelet on and he went up there and he got in trouble, we could have rescued him, maybe. If he got up there and then hid out for a while, and then took off to another state, we know where he is. So if we start doing better tracking throughout the country, then we won't have to go out and have these roundups and find these guys and bring them back into the system so they can find them.
We are on the committee of the whole, amendment number one. Any other discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 101 has passed. We are back on the bill. Any other discussion on the bill? Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I rise in opposition to this bill at this time. Not because it isn't a good idea, but because I believe that it is premature given the work of the Judiciary Committee as we're moving through this session. A number of things have happened since the last time we met, and one of those was the implementation of the Adam Walsh Sex Offender Registration Law. And your committee will be bringing to you a bill to implement Adam Walsh. Adam Walsh changes the whole playing field right now. Currently, as we register sex offenders now, we have a tiered system where we look at, and we have supposed to have a hearing to decide whether or not the offender is a low risk, high risk, medium risk of reoffense. That goes out the window with Adam Walsh, and we're going to register everybody. We have changed the dates in which, in terms of registration, we'll tighten that down. The other thing that we have done is we have passed through this body already the harboring of a sex offender bill. And there are some inconsistencies with this bill, with the sex offender harboring bill, where we create a felony for not only failing to register, but a felony potentially if you harbor a sex offender. In this bill, we have a misdemeanor. The misdemeanor is that if you remove the ankle bracelet, you get a misdemeanor. That very same act could be the same thing as taking that affirmative act of harboring a sex offender. Given the state of affairs where we find ourselves right now, I believe that this bill is premature at this point in time until we implement Adam Walsh, until we move all of our statutes along with regards to sex offenders. Clearly, it is a problem. I do believe that the technology is there. But the question is, this is a whole new program. We have a whole set of bills coming through this legislature, which I believe will be enacted, that will move the state towards protecting our citizenry with regards to sex offenders. The question is, do you want to take up this at this point in time? I believe at this point in time, we ought to hold off until we implement the necessary statutes that we are presenting to you as a package. This was not part of the Judiciary Committee's package. I applaud the good senator from Natrona County for his perseverance with this. It probably will be something that will move forward in the future, but I believe it's premature at this point in time.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You notice, as the good senator from Laramie County sat down, he said, there's probably something we're going to have to do in the future. What we're doing right now, by taking this, when we just passed this amendment, we're taking this to a study in a high concentration area, an area of high concentration of child sex offenders, and we're going to develop the data and the know-how of how to do this. We have, when we come in here with a new file, a Senate file, we have to address current law and what's going on when we develop it. And if we have other bills going through at the same time that may affect it, like taking off an ankle bracelet actually being harboring, and we need to make that a felony rather than a misdemeanor, there's no problem. We can do that. But what we do have, if let's talk about the statutes going through, we right now have legislation going through, and if passed, is going to say you get one strike, and then you get another one before you're out. What this does is it gives us the knowledge in this pilot program to keep a guy like this who's on the registry and all he's got tethering him in is pieces of paper, laws and statutes saying if you do this, then we'll do that. And this pilot project will give us the knowledge of how to keep track of this guy who third degree sexual assault, moral and indecent act as a child in Nebraska, and then move to Wyoming. It will give us the ability to keep track of them by the time we're waiting on them, and hopefully they don't do that second strike. But it fits right in with what we're doing right now, and I'd ask for your favorable approval of this bill.
Senator Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand in support of this bill. And my perspective of this is sexual abuse in our country has been long overlooked. I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 14. And it was never, I never even heard of anybody else that had been abused while I was in my 20s, and that was once. And then, as I went through my process of getting myself better over that, what happened to me, I've gone out and spoke, and it's still a subject that is, that was so put back that people were afraid to bring it out. But now, finally, and I commend what is going on in our legislature at this time, because we're finally starting to look at it. And you know, it's been here for a long, long time. It's time to stop looking at it and get ahead of the game for once. And this bill will get us ahead of something that we will look at, and then as all these other things are progressing, this bill will just be there and so we'll know where we need to go, and then we can not be starting it down the road, but let's get on something that's been going on for a long time. So I hope that you'll support this bill.
Other discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 101, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Senate File 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Division has been called. All those in favor of Senate File 101, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Senate File 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 31. Yes, sir. Sorry. Senator Manson.
Thank you, Chairman. May I have privilege with the floor?
Privilege of the floor is granted, sir.
Yeah, and just very quickly, I know that we want to move on to some other bills here. A few minutes ago, and I didn't want to interrupt the debate, there was sort of a reference to the founding part of our history here in Wyoming. And I just wanted to state that with my background as a historian, it certainly has given me an appreciation of the different perspectives that one can bring to an important part of our history. With regard to the building of the Union Pacific Railroad, indeed, there were conflicts that resulted from the construction of that railroad, particularly with regard to some of the tribes who were living in the area, because this was going to have a deleterious effect on their hunting grounds in particular. So there were some conflicts, particularly with the Lakota and the Siskas, as also called Northern Cheyenne, but also there were some benefits from it. Some of the survey crews, long before the workers arrived, followed a group of Crow Indians to the west of here, and discovered the path that eventually became one of the key links in the laying of that railroad to the west of here. They didn't realize that there had been a path through here, too. So, indeed, the military did come out here to insert themselves between the conflicting parties, but the military also had another role, and the other role was to remove squatters, people who were setting up tents at the end of the tracks. These small tent towns were usually made up of speculators, thieves, murderers, and prostitutes. And for the most part, the military did a very good job of removing those towns, but a few persisted, and one actually became our state capital.
Thank you, Senator. Reading clerk, please read Senate File 31.
Senate File Number 31, sponsored by Senator Geist, Automobile Joint Titles Transfer, an act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barrasso, Geist, Pastor, Johnson, Von Flater, and Senator Barrasso, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Barrasso?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to win the committee the whole rise and report to do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 31, Automobile Joint Titles Transfer. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask that it be read into this time, please.
Senate File 31, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendment as well. I'll explain the bill and the amendment. This bill is brought because of a constituent in Washington County who had some concerns about being able to take the title of a vehicle after the death of a spouse. Looking into what was involved in that, it involved going to a lawyer and having certain papers drawn up, and we thought we could make that a little simpler. We worked with the county clerk to deal with this problem of transferring a title upon death. The amendment basically allows that to be clarified. It allows it to also include horse trailers, not just motor vehicles. And the third is that if a spouse, a surviving spouse has a vehicle and he or she doesn't want to keep it but wants to sell it, that they're allowed to sell that as well without having to go through all of the different machinations of changing the title into the one name and then the other. It says that if the surviving spouse wants to keep the vehicle, they can get the title in their name and not pay taxes on it, but if the surviving spouse wants to sell the thing, then whoever buys it has to pay taxes. That's the thrust behind the amendment. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Senator Cooper. Any discussion on the Amendment Number 1? All those in favor of Senator Barrasso's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment has passed to Senate File 31. We're back on the bill. Any other discussion? Senator Barrasso?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And with the amendments, the county treasurers who came to testify as well as the sponsor are all in support, and I recommend adoption and then for a vote.
Thank you. Senator Cooper?
Mr. Chairman, I just had a quick maybe question for the sponsor of the bill. There's no problem with the probate or estate laws or issues like that. I just a question.
Senator Guy.
I didn't understand the question.
Senator Cooper.
Okay. Yeah, I just said, because if somebody dies, a lot of times if they leave a will or don't leave a will, or sometimes there's an issue with probating their estate and so forth, and I just wonder if there was any concern about that or whether that was ever brought up.
Senator Guy.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear that committee. What we're doing here was if my wife and I most of us have our titles and or, and if one of us passes away, you go around all of the different counties in Wyoming, and they all have a different way of having you do it. Some of them make you go get an attorney, get an affidavit, and cost you $300-$400. Some of them bring a death certificate in, and they would change it. So with this bill, it's clear that you bring a death certificate in, and they'll change the title into your name and take the deceased off from it. That's what the bill's all about. And then in Fremont County, they testified that they do a lot of transfer of horse trailers and things like that. So we thought, well, we'd just as well include all that in this bill. So that's why it's here.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rising in support of the bill, I can tell you that doing some work in this area, that typically these things are, they may or may not be influenced by a will or a trust, but there is a simplified probate procedure that allows this to be transferred without having to do a full probate. The chairman of the agricultural committee is exactly right in that there's as you go around the state, some people already, some counties and their clerks will allow you to do this very thing right now. Others will require you at least go through the probate process or the simplified probate process. So I'm in favor of this bill because it makes it clear that you will have the same procedure throughout the state. You go down and show your death certificate, have it moved into the name, and you're off and running, And it probably means that less, you know, $75 less for me, but I can live with that.
Any other discussion? We're ready for the question. All those in favor of Senator Barrasso's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 31, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Senate File 31 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 131. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 131, sponsored by Senator Scott. Wyoming Cancer Control Act, an act relating to public health. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Ullman, Barrasso, Feck, Hastert, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Jobe, Meyer, Peterson, and Townsend. No, Senator Nicholas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with the recommendation of Senate File 131 do pass. Mr. Chairman, there was a standing committee amendment, but I think it would be more understandable if we explain the bill first, and then I'll ask for the standing committee amendment to be read in and move it. Mr. Chairman, this bill originated as a cancer control plan that was distributed. I think all of you probably got a copy of it last year. It was done by a consortium that's come together that was basically a private venture, although a number of our state employees participated in it. And the origin of this bill was former Speaker of the House had an article in the Casper Star Tribune saying we ought to lobby legislators to vote for the implementation of the cancer control plan. And I called him up and said, what legislation? And that led to the development of this legislation. What the legislation does, I'll try to explain it as briefly as I can. You go through the bill. On page 3, I call your attention to a definition of evidence-based, a fairly rigorous definition. There was testimony favorable to it from the academic researchers in committee. We're always referring in these bills to we want our procedures want not to be evidence-based. That's just what it is. On page 5, discusses the cancer control plan. We're going to get the health department to take it over, and there's guidance provided starting on page 5 as to what we're looking for as they update this cancer control plan. And, Mr. Chairman, if we make progress against cancer, it will have to be updated. On page 8, there's a set of priorities. I would call your particular attention to page 8, line 14, where we're going to do a pilot program in county cancer resource coordinators. Those are defined further on page 3. It's thought that there'll be some benefits from that pilot project, and I understand the budget for that is in the governor's budget. We'll get to it when we get to the budget. On page 10 and following, you've come to the biggest ticket item in this bill, and that's the proposal to get the state into the business of providing colonoscopies, which are the effective treatment against prevention of colorectal cancer. We'll do it up to 250% of the federal poverty level. And for a family of one, answer the question before it gets asked, that's $24,500 a year, family of two, $33,000 a year is what that level is. Mr. Chairman, explain two things. First, we picked colonoscopies and colorectal cancer as a target by process of elimination. The major cancer killer, most important one, is lung cancer. The way you prevent that is anti-tobacco efforts. And the state has a vigorous anti-tobacco program, so we didn't see what additional we could do that. The second largest cancer killer are the gender-related cancers. Breast and cervical cancer for the ladies, prostate cancer for the men. We have vigorous programs against breast and cervical cancer. This bill does expand some of them. We'll get to that in a minute. But we do have vigorous programs there already. In prostate cancer, the current test, the PSA, is dirt cheap. Last time I had one done through the health fairs, cost $15. We don't see the opportunity at this point, given the state of our scientific knowledge, for legislative action in that area. The next largest killer, number three, for both men and women, is colorectal cancer. And it is better than 90% preventable. If you follow the standard recommendations, as this bill does, that once you get to age 50, you have a screening colonoscopy every 10 years, providing that is confidently done, you ought to be able to prevent better than 90% of the cancers. Because what they do is they go in and not only they look for cancers, but the most important thing they do is they remove the polyps that may become cancers. And once they do that, then you're protected. And the reason it's not 100%, Mr. Chairman, is nothing in this world is 100% perfect, and it is possible for them to miss one. But the odds are very, very good. And those procedures, Mr. Chairman, are expensive. At the low end, it'll cost you at least $1,000 if they find nothing and if you get a good rate. If they find something, it's not uncommon for the cost to go $2,500 or even $4,500, sometimes even more. And that cost, that uncertainty is a major barrier for people getting the screening done. And we're having less than 50% of our population is getting screened. So what we're proposing is that up to the 250% federal poverty level, the state will go ahead and pay for it. And we dealt with the insurance aspects. Most people's insurance policies, Mr. Chairman, in this day and age, cover only a small portion of that, don't cover enough to, and consistently enough, to get the job done. So what we're saying is we're going to go ahead and pay, and then we'll see that the insurance commissioner will see that any savings that accrue to the insurance company, their rate-setting methodology, picks that up and comes back to us as our rates don't go up quite as fast for health insurance. And they will have savings, both from state paying for these procedures, and more importantly, from not having the cost of some of these cancers that we'll prevent. Ms. Chairman, that's a centerpiece of this particular piece of the legislation. On page 16, we have a treatment section. What do we do in the rare cases, and they are rare, where they actually find a cancer? Rather than just preventing it, they actually find one. We're going, first people have to use their private resources, but then for those that have had the colonoscopy on the state program, they're members of the income test on them, then we'll have a $10,000 deductible, because that's what so many of the private insurance has anymore, and then the state will pay up to $50,000 to get those treated. We think we have controlled the cost there well enough so that it won't be extraordinarily expensive. Notice the upper limit with the government program. We could have, Mr. Chairman, gone the Medicaid route, but we thought it would cost more because we couldn't institute the kind of cost controls we have. The final piece of the bill, Mr. Chairman, is we're having a major problem in our society in the area of pain management. Is a major issue in treating cancer, particularly terminal cancer. Sometimes our efforts to control the abuse of prescription drugs conflict with people getting adequate pain management medications. And That's a major problem. We're taking the first step down the road for dealing with that, putting together a broad-based committee to deal with that, make recommendations to the licensing agency, to the practitioners, to this legislature, to the feds, because the feds can be part of the problem here. And that's the last piece of the bill. Mr. Chairman, that's a quick run-through of the bill. Let me at this time ask that the committee number one standing committee amendment be read in.
Senate file 131, standing committee amendment number one, page 10, line 21. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment does a couple things. It provides a cross-reference that was needed. We have a bidding process for being eligible as a provider to provide these on the state program. We're going to try to field competitive bid, which is something a little new in this medical area. And we added a couple of precautions. One, we found out we've got providers that work in more than one county. The provision is that the lowest bidder in each county gets the work, and there's some other provisions where you don't have a bidder. And we're asking for separate bids when somebody's working in more than one county. And some of the counties may have only one bidder, so we put in a precaution that the department can reject the bid if it's unreasonable. And you can see the language there. The other thing we did is in the pain management section, the representation that came to us was that it would be very wise to have the professional licensing boards that are most involved in this, involved on that committee, and that's what the Standing Committee Amendment does, representatives from Board of Nursing, Board of Medicine, and Board of Pharmacy, and we add them to the committee. It does make the committee large, but those people have an important influence on how pain is managed, and we thought they should be part of the process. Also, makes it clear in a couple of instances that they're going to look at pain management in the hospice setting. In the law enforcement area, we added the ability of the governor, who appoints the committee, to appoint either a local law enforcement person or somebody from the federal drug enforcement agency. So trying to improve the representation on the committee. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment, I stand for questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Any questions on Standing Committee Amendment number one? Are you ready for the questions? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment number one has passed Senate File 131. I believe there is a second Standing Committee Amendment.
Senate File 131, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 25, line 7.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment 2 to Senate File 131 and urge your favorable consideration. The bill before you does, in the words of the sponsor, get the state into the business of doing colonoscopies. The colonoscopies are to be provided for anybody up to 250% of the federal poverty level, and it's based upon an income approach and not an asset approach. So we're not going to look at folks' assets, whether they can afford them, or even whether they have insurance. Rather, we're going to provide them to all persons who are identified or can fall within that 250% of the federal poverty level. The notion, of course, that part of the bill is that for those people that are insured in that insured population, we'll proceed to provide those benefits to them, and then we'll go back to the insurance commissioner and ask the insurance commissioner to adjust everybody's insurance rate to reflect that this is a reduction in their cost. It is a brand new program. It's an expansion, and the recommendation from the Appropriations Committee was that the appropriations be reduced in half. The amendment before you reduces it in half and further reduces the individual items by half as well.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on the Standing Committee Amendment with regard to page 26, line 6, and the reduction of the funds that were requested for the support of the Commission on Pain Management. This is a pretty critical committee that's being set up. And there's a great deal of statistics indicating that pain management is costing our system as well as the entire country a significant amount of money with regard to increased health care. So it seemed to me that $100,000 for the operation of that committee to bring 20 people together several times a year and for a staff person seemed rather reasonable. So I was curious as to what testimony the Appropriations Committee heard that indicated otherwise.
Senator Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The simple facts are that the bill comes before you, has a major appropriation for brand new programs. The sponsors of the bill have not prioritized the items within their bill, and it was appropriate to give across the board. If the sponsors want to come back and prioritize items one before the other, it's a very simple thing to advise the committee that this is your highest priority and these are the lowest priorities. That was not done.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President. Mr. Chairman, with regard to the amendment, was there any discussion on why all of these studies actually? Why they weren't referred to the Health Care Commission? We have a group that we fund to the tune of millions of dollars to do research and to present us with priorities and facts on a new program. We subsidize their operation, and it is literally millions of dollars to operate that group. And now all of a sudden we're going out and we're gathering up a whole different group of people and saying, now go study this. Is it a priority? Is it not a priority? Why wasn't the Health Commission used to do these studies?
Senator Nichols.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's difficult to respond on behalf of the committee. My vote was a no vote on the bill for generally the reasons you spoke through. With respect to the committee itself, it was trying to come to grips with a very large appropriation with some features of the bill that looked favorable and some that were not. With a lack of prioritization by anyone other than the sponsors themselves and no internal prioritization. So you see a 50% reduction, but for those very reasons, I was a no vote.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with regard to the question, and it'd be the relevance to the appropriation, I believe, for the pain management section, as to why that was a separate committee with an appropriation as opposed to the Health Care Commission. So that's the area where there will be some studies done here. Mr. Chairman, the Health Care Commission is set up to deal with broad health policy issues. The pain issue is much more one requiring professional expertise in the relevant areas of treatment. It's a question of how do we adjust the continuing education and education requirements for our licensees, how do we adjust the treatment that is actually given in our practices, how do we keep our efforts to control the abuse of prescription drugs from interfering with the management of pain for cancer survivors or cancer victims. And, Mr. Chairman, the Health Care Commission, you'd want a very different membership than it has in order to do this properly, a good deal more specialized, as this bill does provide. Mr. Chairman, the whole business of providing health care is an extraordinarily broad and complex subject. And no one group is going to be able to deal with the whole thing. Mr. Chairman, with regard to the amendment itself, I rise to support the big ticket items in the amendment. Now we are getting into something new here. This is something when your constituents ask you, what did we do to reduce the cost of health care and improve the quality of health care? This is something you can point to. And it is something new for the state. It will reduce the cost for health insurance because we won't have to treat so many people. It will save lives. It will reduce the incidence of cancer. The problem we have with the appropriation that they cut in half, the $8 million, they cut to $4 million, and the council cut in the treatment provision, is that we simply don't know what the uptake is. We can estimate the number and have the number of people that will be eligible and that need it. But there are some barriers to people actually getting the treatment. It's not necessarily a very pleasant procedure, and people resist it. And we don't really know what the demand's going to be. So I think it's prudent at this time what they did in terms of reducing the budget, and I support that part of the amendment, which is where the big dollars are. Now, I will tell you, Mr. Chairman, there was nothing I would like better than to be here a year from now saying the program was a roaring success. Of the 2,000 that will be funded with this amendment, we've got them all done, and we need more money because we know with more money we can save more lives. And, you know, we're relying on the primary care physicians in the state, on the doctors in the state to get on television and give people advice on their health care. We're relying on all those mechanisms to get the word out there's a wonderful new benefit available, and people can save their lives by taking advantage of it. And if they do that, Mr. Chairman, then we'll come back with some experience and say, this is what it really ought to cost. I would love to do that. I regard the program a great success if we do. But at this point, I think we're better off adopting the Standing Committee Amendment in that respect.
Senator Meyer.
That's all right.
Any other discussion? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 131 has passed. We're back on the bill. Any other discussion on the bill? You ready for the Senator Meyer?
I have a committee of the whole amendment over ask the reading clerk read it in.
Senate File 131, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 25, line 7.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Mr. Chairman, this goes into the budget and does a little bit of fine-tuning on the Second Committee the Whole, or the Second Standing Committee Amendment. It is a revenue-neutral amendment, Mr. Chairman. It goes into subsection C on page 25, line 16. This is the area that where there's an appropriation for the Department of Health for Breast and Cervical Cancer Education, Outreach, and Screening. It restores that to the original $120,000. It also goes into subsection D, and this is the area for the outreach pilot program for the medically underserved populations. It restores that 50% reduction to the original $30,000. It makes a reduction in subsection A from $4 million down to $3,925,000. The $3,925,000 or the $4 million, Mr. Chairman, is really a shot in the dark. We had testimony that Colorado had $1,000 in their program of similar situations. This is actually enough money yet for 2,000. So I think we're okay till the next budget session. But my intent to restore the full funding in those two programs. I think that they're worthy appropriations.
Discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 131 has passed. We're back on the bill. Division has been called. All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. Yeah. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 131 is passed. We're back on the bill. Any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 131, please say aye. Opposed, nay. Senate File 131 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Please just sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Messages from the House.
February the 2nd, 2007, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 225, collection costs for debts owed to the state. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill Number 318, state lands leasing procedures. Ayes 59, excused 1. February the 2nd, 2007, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 63, County Officials Housing Allowance. Ayes 49, noes 10, excused 1. House Bill Number 75, Unemployment Insurance Amendments. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill Number 112, Tuition, Survivors of Specified Deceased Public Servants. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 143, Integrated Gasification Combined Cycle Electric Generation. Ayes 43, noes 15, excused 1, conflict 1. House Bill Number 189, Prison Contraband. Ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1. House Bill Number 197, Environmental Quality Council Hearing Examiner. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill Number 272, Liquor License Signatories. Ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 95, Quality Child Care Substitute Bill Number 1. Ayes 42, no 17, excused 1. February the 2nd, 2007, from the House of Representatives, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 217, Safety Belt Violations. Ayes 25, noes 34, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Report from standing committees.
February the 2nd, 2007, Mr. President, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 42, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Jennings, and Von Flatern, noes,
or excuse Senator Cole of conflict, Senator Massey, Senator Jennings, Chairman. February the 1st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 152, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 1st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 175, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, and Scott. No, Senator Larson, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 1st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred Senate File 169, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 1st, 2007, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 236, in gross, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Cooper, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Basie, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, House Bill 42, Gross Development and Preschool Funding, had an appropriation on it. I'd like to re-refer that to Committee 2. And Mr. President, I didn't hear it. Did you read House Bill 115 for education?
No. Okay.
Thank you.
House Bill 42 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, unless there are objections. Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I have the privilege of the floor, please?
Senator, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Just a reminder note, you all received a letter signed by me earlier in the session. I'd like to remind you of the Super Bowl Sunday party at the Hitching Post from 5 to 6:30 on Sunday night. This is an event for CSG to enable you to meet the chairman of CSG West and the executive director, Kent Briggs. Talk a little bit about the convention, which I've had many people after put this notice up still wanting to know about the date of the CSG West Convention. As you can see, it's September 16th and 19th at the Grand Teton Lodge. But if you would, in order that we can maybe prepare for a number of people who will be there with a little bit of hors d'oeuvres and so on, if you would either respond to the number at the bottom, which is Danielle Lindsay at 421-3429, or let me know so that we can have perhaps some idea of how many may be there. This is for our legislators and possible sponsors and everything. So if you would, before the day's over, if you plan to be there, we'd like to know that. If you haven't responded, come anyway. It should be a good time, and you will get to meet the officers of the CSG West organization. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, is this the last day to have bills out of committee in the House of Origin? I would like to thank you for your hard work in moving all the appropriate Senate bills, I believe, moved out of committee. And I appreciate the long hours and the hard work. That's what it's all about here, and it's because of your dedication that sort of thing happens. Thank you very much. Senator Hines, Mr. Majority Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move the Senate be in recess until 1:15.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet 15 minutes after our noon recess in Senate File 18 to discuss House Bill 139, in growth, storage tank remediation program, House Bill 12, electric utility. Utility Resources and House Bill 47 and Bill Regulating Wage Amendments. And Mr. President, if we don't get through those, which due to the short lunch hour, I suspect we will not, we will reconvene on adjournment to finish any work on those same bills. And further, Mr. Chairman, your committee number 9, Minerals Business and Economic Development, will meet Monday, February 5th, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to discuss House Bill 118 in gross, capital facility sales tax, House Bill 88, fire standards exemptions, House Bill 114, tobacco products, self-service displays, and as time allows, House Bill 65 in gross, defrauding drugs and alcohol screening bill.
Senator Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Joint Appropriations Committee was scheduled to meet at 1. Did the move up of our other schedule? We'll meet at 12:30. Okay. Well, we'll have a full hour here, a majority there. We will meet at 12:30 to consider Senate File 158, Industrial Amendment.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. to consider the following House bills. House Bill 19, incest, increase in penalties. House Bill 120 in gross, sex offender registration. And House Bill 36 in gross, rape shield law.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, your committee number 4, Education, will meet Monday at 8 a.m. over here in S-11. We will consider House Bill 38, School District Bond Issues, House Bill 54, Hazing Prohibition, House Bill 104, Harassment, Intimidation, or Bullying Prohibition.
The motion is for the Senate to be in recess until 1:15. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The Senate is in recess until 1:15.